a wild man.
I want you to struggle, and I want you wrestling with them angels.
Here he is, from Auburn University, Bo Jackson.
The correct Jordan Harris Stadium time is 8:39 p.m. Central Standard Time. Your digital audio device is tuned to the Orange and True podcast, harbored by the good folks at collegeofmagnolia.com. See them for all your College of Magnolia needs. And it is I, SenecaCrow2 on Twitter. You can find me at SenecaCrow on Venmo. You can call me Drew if you want. To one side of me, via the magic of internet and Microsoft Skype simulator, Ryan Starrett, at Ryan S. Starrett. The S
stands for Sodal?
Sodal. No, the S stands for... You know what's funny is I never come up with these. I'm sure everyone can tell that I don't ever come up with these until we start the pod. But let's think. The S stands for Sharif. I heard a lady's voice there for a second.
How about this? The S stands for Sharif can be our thing, like Bono's was for Chief.
Right. Wait, okay. Did anybody else hear that lady's voice?
No, just you.
The S stands for the NSA. That's what it sounds like. And
forget Big Brother, more like Big Sister.
I'm talking about over off Wire Road somewhere. The AU chief.
Uh-oh. Hello?
Hello.
Oh, I froze up on the intro.
Chief, we're
good.
Can you read me? Night. Can you read me?
I'm
over?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Roger.
Affirmative.
Roger.
Tonight, we will talk about nothing besides Auburn basketball. Especially Auburn's triumphant win over South Carolina in a place that it hasn't won in forever. I knew it had been a long time, but I don't think until after the game did I realize it had been since like...
Tony Barbie
was
our coach.
Kind of the... Towards the end of the Barbie era.
2013. Well, it would have been 2014, I guess, right?
Yeah.
No, spring 2013.
Okay.
No, 14. Yeah, we'll go with that.
Nick Marshall was our quarterback.
Is that right?
Kareem Canty was our point guard. They were heady times.
Yeah. Yeah.
Could have had Nick Marshall as our point guard, too.
Should have.
That's the same season that I saw us play South Carolina at like 9 p.m. in Auburn Arena with about maybe 100 other people.
Look, Barbie would have been successful.
Were there more points there in this win support than there were people in the stadium last time?
Yes.
Okay.
Wow. Are we just skipping by the Arkansas game? Is that what we're doing?
Well,
we can talk about the Arkansas game. I kind of do want to talk about that a little bit just as far as like, we kind of always want to see what a team looks like that's been hot when they go cold. And that's what that looks like. Similar to like, I can't remember which game it was, that team, that Mustafa Heron team. I guess it was that first round game in the NCAA tournament. This team was so good. And then all of a sudden, oh, this is what happens when we miss every shot.
Yeah.
It looks like that.
The other thing that happened is we like, couldn't stop Sills.
Yeah.
Like, he just, like, he could have thrown something up from the three-point line behind his, like, not looking at the goal, and it would have gone in.
We had we had absolutely nothing for him. There were a couple of guys that were that way.
Yeah, he didn't do too much in the first half, and then the second half probably had 25 points or something like that. It was pretty crazy.
Yeah, Sills had 22 points off the bench, and I'm not really sure. Like, has he normally been a starter this year?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
he played 32 minutes. He played as much as anybody else on the team did. I didn't even realize until I looked at the box score after the game that he wasn't a starter.
Yeah, I mean, it could be a situation where he's like one of our guys that plays starter minutes off the bench. Like, Devin was doing that for a while, right?
Yeah. I think that's right. Yeah. I think he was.
So they actually had two starters that played a combined 20 minutes. So I guess that's where most of Sills' minutes came from. Were they intentionally running a small ball lineup?
Yeah, I don't really know what they were doing, because whatever they were doing in the first half
worked.
Whatever they did in the first half didn't work.
Well, yeah.
Whatever they did in the second half absolutely worked. I don't know. They were very physical in the second half too, which is I'm afraid that's how you beat Auburn, is being very physical. If you can beat up on Sharif and get away with it, then we're going to have some problems, I think.
You know, like punch him in the face and get away with it?
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Well,
which, you know, they were letting them bang all game to a degree.
Yes. And then all of a sudden, with like, you know, 2 minutes left, they called everything. And then
called
nothing.
Nothing there. Yeah.
It's I can't. To me, like,
it's annoying.
The annoying thing about college basketball officiating is how often we sit here doing this. Like, oh, maybe the ref would have won. I mean, I hate being the ref's guy, because I think that that's a lousy take, because there are 100 possessions.
Well, especially in this game. We were up 19 freaking points. Like,
The refs didn't lose that game. The refs didn't blow a 19-point lead. But I also will continue to say, as I always say, there is a reason why Auburn is the only college basketball that I watch, because the officiating in the sport is so bad and so inconsistent that when you see a well-officiated game, you actually notice it. You're like, oh,
yeah,
wow, the officiating is really good in this game, which you don't in like any other level of basketball.
Well, I watched a Cavs game, I guess the next day after that, and
different sport.
Like, it's wild. Like, to a degree, it got as annoying as college basketball can get, because there was a foul on both ends of the floor for an entire quarter, every possession.
Yeah.
There was just a foul, 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 foul. And it was just like, geez, this, the flow of this game stinks. But it's like, oh, this would not happen in it would. It has happened before, but then the rest of the game, there's the same things aren't fouls.
Which would be mayhem, yeah.
Yeah, so it's just...
The NBA really often will have the problem where they officiate things extremely tight in the first quarter.
Yeah.
And then kind of loosen it up because they're trying to set a tone.
Yeah. Well, and also they're like, oh, everybody's going to foul out if we keep calling the game.
That too. And so like,
which I'm okay with that. I'm okay with the call it tight at the beginning of the game.
I am too.
And if you've got to loosen it up, okay. But don't loosen it up and then tighten it back up with like 3 minutes to go or whatever. Like,
and then if you're going to miss a call, it cannot be to a potential flagrant, because it's to the face. Like a to the head
foul
is a flagrant foul by the letter of the rule, at least in the NBA. Like,
it's flagrant foul. That is a question I had. Why wasn't that reviewed?
That's a great question.
Because if it was contact to the head, that's always reviewed
in
basketball, right?
Because I guess nobody but Sharif noticed it.
But I mean, is it on him to say, hey, coach, I got hit in the face?
I guess. But then, like, by that time, it's too late. Like, they, you know, everybody's on the floor. The coach can't go, hey, you got to review this when the game's been over for 2 minutes.
And if you want to know why basketball players, especially in the pro level and now in college, are beginning to look more and more like soccer players, that's why.
That's exactly why.
That's exactly why.
Because I've never complained about guys flopping for the most part. It can be annoying in soccer for sure. Like, there's a guy who plays for Everton who has a reputation as being a diver, and he does make a lot out of fouls. But the dude gets kicked all over the pitch all game without the refs even looking his way.
Like Neymar. Neymar actually does get fouled every time he has the ball. But he accentuates the foul because there's one referee
on
an entire field that can call those fouls.
Right.
And in college basketball, if it doesn't look like you've been shot with a gun, sometimes they don't call it.
Yeah. Yeah. And in basketball, just like soccer, there's all kinds of subtle ways to foul people that there are guys that are specialists at fouling and holding on to, like, grabbing onto your jersey where the refs can't see it. That, like, they're as smart about that stuff as Sharif is about passing. There are,
and
dudes,
if you're
like,
a guy like Isaac Okoro or LeBron, one of these big dudes, you've got to sell it because the referees are not going to give you an inch. Right. Because they're not gonna, it's not gonna look like you've been fouled because the guy's not gonna move your whole body.
You're a big dude, and I mean, I don't know how they fix that in college.
Get better refs, like legitimately, just train your refs from a central location. Yeah. Like have a,
I mean, hire them as full time employees.
Well, the NFL refs aren't full time employees, Ryan.
Well, I don't know what kind of,
unless
point
they have been recently,
there.
But
yeah, I
mean, it's not exactly like those games are officiated.
No, okay, well, wait, hang on. They are on a full time payroll from one Tom Brady, I'm pretty sure. So,
true.
I would say basketball, in my opinion, is the hardest sport on earth to officiate.
Yeah, I think so too.
And the higher the level goes, the harder it is, because the athleticism makes it to where it is really almost impossible for a person who is athletic as, let's say, JT Thor or Alan Flanagan to not travel off of a catch on the run. It's almost physically, their legs are moving too fast. Their bodies are too quick. It's so tough. So it will look like at times travels and things like that are being let go. They aren't. It just is going to, it's going to look like traveling because these guys are too athletic and too fast, which is why when like, the European rule for traveling is different than the American rule. And so when we play in the Olympics, our guys get called for traveling in the first like couple of games like crazy because we're not used to it, because those rules haven't caught up to.
You like literally have to catch.
It's a dribble.
2 feet on the floor, dribble, and then move.
You cannot catch and take 2 steps like you can in every other – like you can in the United States, because those are the rules that it was before athletes started being as fast as they are.
Sure.
And we changed our rules and FIBA didn't. College basketball has to change its rules too in a lot of ways to catch up with the athleticism of the game. Imagine Sharif Cooper right now playing with NBA rules on an NBA-sized court in college basketball. He would have at least 4 or 5 more assists a game just because the lane isn't going to be as crowded. There's a defense of 3 seconds. It would be unbelievable. The numbers he'd be putting up. Which brings me to my segue. The numbers he is putting up are unbelievable.
Insane. Just crazy insane. And it with each passing game makes me madder and madder that the NCAA held him up on some.
We don't know just, why, Chief. They haven't explained why they held him up.
Of course.
Is it possible the NCAA was like, we got like double crossed where we talked about Jan Williams being held out until the end of the year last year. Maybe we just kind of said, oh, hey, Sharif can't play. And then he won't look totally ready by the end of the year.
Maybe you say Bruce asked the NCAA to hold him off. Hey, look, we're imposing a 1 year ban anyway. Hold this guy off. And then next year he'll have to come back.
Yeah, but I think anybody that saw Sharif behind the scenes would have known what he was capable of if he got to play like 3 games this year. It would have been like, oh, yeah, this dude is this good.
I'll also say shout out to the team because this team, adding a Sharif Cooper is not a plug-and-play thing.
Yeah.
Because he's so ball dominant to the point where I don't think Auburn's ever seen a player.
We're playing completely differently than we did before he came back. Yeah. Like it's not even the same.
I haven't looked at like all time usage rate for Auburn, but I would imagine he's going to be number one. Like nobody's in the 30s or 37s. And you add a guy who's got a usage rate above 33, and it doesn't look like it took them that long to do it. Like it was like, oh yeah, this is what he does. He has the ball the whole game. And we're going to let him do that because I'm going to be open. Like it was a really – there's a lot of culture things I think we kind of glossed over. Everyone wants to talk about three guys volunteering to go to the bench when he came out, and which is great, except one of them was Alan Flanagan, and that's not like he wasn't ever going to go to the bench.
Right.
It was even easier for him to.
Yeah. Hey, man, I'll go to the bench.
Coach, if you want to sit me, that's okay.
Yeah, Bruce is like, no, Alan, what? Yeah, I think the real side of the culture is how this team just kind of, okay, I'm not going to get as many minutes with the ball in my hand as I have been. But that's cool because I'm actually going to score more. That's like that's a big deal these dudes all had to do.
Yeah.
It's like we are better when that dude has the ball 35% of the time we're on offense. That's nuts.
And he draws so much of the focus to himself too that that helps guys out just by itself.
Yeah. The South Carolina game. So the Arkansas game, we blew a 19-point. Auburn blew a 19-point lead. It was a disaster. It could have very easily set Alan Flanagan back a year in terms of his confidence. That was the thing that I was most excited about, was that he bounced back with a career high the next week, the next game.
Well, and he carried some of it over early into the game. Like he was not looking great to start the game, and then by the end of the game, he was maybe the best player on the floor.
Yeah.
So
he went from the Arkansas game where he wanted to be there by the end of the game to, like you said, like he's the first option in a game that Auburn won by 20.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
I also think it's rad that we were able to kind of see JT Thor. The first half against Arkansas was maybe the best basketball JT Thor's played all year. He was sensational.
Yeah. It was so fun to watch. That dude, I would be just as devastated if he leaves after this year as I am if Sharif does, because I mean, part of me thinks if Sharif goes, then Thor might as well go too, because I don't think he's as fun without that guy on the floor with him. But
you got to add his Rocket Raccoon. That's what I keep comparing. Yeah. I keep comparing them to Rocket Raccoon and Groot, because like this giant lanky machine, and then and then Rocket Raccoon just is tiny thing that just keeps bopping around. I think Thor's second half against South Carolina was like bonkers too, with his like steals and dunks. And he's a defensive nightmare right now.
Yeah. Well, especially when he can hit that three, and he's not really shooting a ton of them for us, but do you know his percentage off the top of your head?
He's only 26% from three right now, but that's considerably up during SEC play.
Yeah, he's shooting better once I noticed that was the case.
And part of that is just he's getting better looks from
It's funny. If you ask me, I'd say he probably takes about three a game.
We'll see. In right SEC now. Play, had starting with the Arkansas game, 0 for 2, 0 for 1, 1 for 2, 1 for 3, 1 for 1, 0 for 4 against Kentucky, 1 for 3 against Arkansas, and 1 for 2 against Carolina. You get
the same rate as Horace Spencer.
So then it's his destiny to actually hit that shot send us to the Final Four, right?
Oh, right, man. Next year.
From your lips to God's ears.
Buddy, I would be real happy about that.
Thor against South Carolina had 14 points and 7 rebounds and 2 blocks. But here's the wild thing. He only had 2 fouls. And so you had a guy go from, can this guy play big minutes without fouling, to playing 23 minutes a game and fouling twice. And just defensive rebounds through out the wazoo yet again.
Mm-hmm.
And he went 3 for 3 from the free throw line. Alan Flanagan went 6 for 6 from the free throw line. Sharif went 6 for 7 from the free throw line. Those are our only three guys who took free throws So as a team, Auburn went 15 for 16 from free throw line. Like,
wow,
that's unbelievable for Auburn basketball. We don't have free throw
shooting. Crazy.
Yeah, that's the stat that I really wanted.
It raised Auburn up to just 256 in the country in free throw shooting.
Yeah,
Auburn doesn't after shoot going 15 to 16.
Well,
Sharif had a double-double at halftime.
Yeah, dude, that was crazy. That's the only disappointing.
I don't know how he'd have a triple double.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. That's the only disappointing thing about the game is that he really didn't do a whole lot of assisting the second half. Because I think he only had like two assists in the second half.
Yeah, but he led the team
because he had 11.
Yeah, 11 and a half.
11 assists, 10 points, and 5 rebounds at the half.
He led the team in blocks with 2 blocks as well. Him and JT Thor had 2 blocks.
Incredible. Yeah, but that's the most disappointing thing is he was on pace to shatter the single game assist record for Auburn and get a triple double for the first time since Kenny G, and didn't happen. But you can't have everything you want, I guess. No.
I'm holding my newborn boy because he threw up all over his mother on the couch just now. And so I'm holding him while she cleans herself off. Parenthood.
Just another thing about Sharif. So I'm looking at assist rate on KenPom right now. So he doesn't technically qualify on a lot of the stat leaderboards just because he doesn't have a ton of minutes played. But right now, of the qualified players, the best assist rate in the country is Jalen Moore out of Oakland with an assist rate of 49.8%.
Oakland always has dudes like that.
So assist rate, if I understand it correctly, is of the baskets that are scored when he's on the court, he assists on roughly half of them, right?
Exactly.
Okay. So Shrew right now through 5 SEC games is 57.5%. He is far and away the assist leader in games he's played so far.
That's unbelievable.
That's incredible.
Like, that's a well, again, he has the ball the whole time he's in the game, and which makes guys open. This is he is sucking defense towards him and freeing up his teammates at a crazy level. Another guy who's benefited from this, and I've really liked his game a lot recently, has been Franklin. Like, Javon Franklin has been awesome. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I mean, he's been one of the best guys off the bench. Not playing a ton of minutes.
No, but like, he had...
Every time he's on the court, I mean, Auburn is better for it, I think.
He was in the game for 12 minutes against South Carolina and went 2 for 3. And I think he finished an alley-oop dunk. He played good defense. I liked what we saw out of him. And Devin, everyone wants to forget Devin Cambridge. Devin Cambridge just looks like a different player with Sharif on the court. Devin Cambridge is like, he's like living his best life. Really, I mean,
he's basically playing the way we thought he was going to play going into the season.
Yeah, because he's like, I don't have to carry any offensive load except shoot wide open corner threes and finish alley oops. Great. That's exactly what I'm good at. And he's been great.
Go pick a couple steals in transition and block shots on guys that think they have an open layup. And
he sends messages with his blocks. Like, he legitimately is volleyball spiking blocks as much as he can.
He doesn't have to worry about fouling out because he only has to play 20 minutes.
Was South Carolina the game or Arkansas the game where we had a chase down block followed by a chase down block where I think it was Thor blocked the first guy.
It's happened multiple times this season already. So.
Well, this was Thor blocks the first guy's shot. The trailer gets the rebound and is going for a putback, and Flanagan blocks his shot as a chase down block. It was unbelievable. And then like a third guy made it. So they ended up getting 2 points off of it. But I was like, that is bizarre to have two chase down blocks on one play. It's just that everybody on the team is trying their best to either make highlight plays or to send messages, which for better or for worse, it's like Chiefs dream. We've got like 6 or 7 Malik Dunbars on the team right now.
All shapes and sizes.
We may have lost Chief.
Yeah, I think we did lose Chief.
I brought up Malik just to see if we did, and we did. but I think the best comparison for Devin Cambridge is Malik. Like a taller, even
streak. Yeah, it's a whole.
There he is.
There he is.
It's a whole team of energy guy.
Yeah.
I love it.
Devin Cambridge being the number one, like the Malik Dunbar in training. Like he is Malik. He's a taller, more NBA-bodied Malik Dunbar who can get hot with the best of them, plays high-energy defense, and tries to get a poster made of him every single game. Yeah. It's great.
Javon Franklin has a lot of that in him, too.
Chris Moore does, too.
Yeah, Chris Moore is probably the most. I just think he's not playing as high a level as those other two guys at the moment.
He had a ball slip out of his hands that would have been the best pass streak through all night.
Yeah, I know. Man,
alive. It was like when the ball went to him, I stood up. I was like, how did he see that guy? And then he fumbled out of bounds. I was like, oh my gosh, that would have been, if he had gone up with that and made 2 points, that's on the Shreve Cooper mixtape that we play next year.
Yeah. Oh man.
I mean, we could literally just go down the list and talk about how every guy is playing better with Shreve in the lineup now.
Except for one. There's one player that I don't think it's because of Shreve. I don't think correlation is causation here. But I'm putting out an APB for a stretch Akinbola game.
Yeah.
Because he had some flashes earlier this year where he was going to be this like super high-energy defensive presence. And he's not getting a ton of minutes here recently. And when he comes on the court, he's not wowing anybody. Like, he's just kind of there.
So he's getting about 10 minutes a game the last couple of games. And I will say, I mean, I feel like he's played pretty good defense.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's probably his role right now. Is he's just kind of a defensive stopper.
He's the rim protector.
Yeah, he's only putting up 1 or 2 shots a game. But
And Bruce puts him in, like, it was the end of the South Carolina first half. And I want to say Bruce put him in because there was a late out of bounds. And I think it was South Carolina, maybe Arkansas. And the lineup Bruce ran out there was so bonkers tall. It was like Thor was in the game and Stretch. And I want to say Devin Cambridge. I was like, holy cow, there's like 3 guys in the court right now. Maybe it was Dylan Cardwell. It may have been Cardwell at the 4.
And probably flying at a point.
Yeah, it was a big lineup. Just a defense-only lineup, basically, to defend a baseline out of bounds late in the possession and late in the half. But I was like, golly, Bruce is really tinkering with – he can do that. He can play a little bit of chess because he's got the pieces to do it with which to do it.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of his minutes, a lot of Stretch's minutes have gone to Dylan Cardwell.
Yeah.
Around a couple games.
Stretch did a great job against the really odd-looking dude from Arkansas, so much so that the guy, like, didn't even play.
Yeah, he only had 9 minutes in the game.
That's true.
I don't know. Like, and Stretch did a really great job against him, and then we never saw him again. So Stretch, like, basically took the game away from him.
Absolutely. That's probably what he did. They were like, well, we can't use this dude because they'll put Stretch in.
Yeah, they'll put this other guy in.
It's pretty wild, the talent difference on this team versus, like, Auburn teams in the past, just in terms of like, there's 8 dudes on this team that would have been one of the 3 best players on the 2015 Auburn team.
Yeah, right.
Like legitimately 8 dudes. Like Bruce's first 2 years, if you'd given him Dylan Cardwell Cardwell's a household name. Like, every Auburn fan's like, oh, remember the Cardwell years? Dude was a Dylan monster.
Cardwell missed as many shots in the South Carolina game as he had all of SEC play up until that point. And it's just three. He was still 4-7 from the field in the South Carolina game.
He's like, what was that? He's like the he's the super Robert Chubb.
Oh, Rob Chubb. Yeah, dude, Cardwell is just going to be – he will be a household name before he leaves Auburn because the dude is high energy, fun, big, has skill, can jump. Like, the dude's
going to be Bruce great. Hyped him up today saying, you know, oh, yeah, he can hit a three-point shot.
Everybody can. Bruce wants everybody on the team shooting 5 threes a game.
I think Cardwell will take 1 3 this year.
Thanks.
And we're going to see how it goes. But
I hope it's at the end of the first half against Alabama and he makes it.
Oh, man.
At the end of the first half and he just loses his mind. And then makes it, grabs the ball out of the hoop and punts it into the crowd at Coleman Coliseum.
Is he the most high energy dude we've ever had?
He's up there. He is like...
from during the Bruce era, everybody knows how much I love Malik Dunbar, but this guy,
I mean, Malik and Horace would have to do cocaine to get to Dylan Carbone's level.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of it is the guy's like not afraid to embarrass himself.
No.
Which makes it awesome. So
that's that Shaq quality.
Yeah.
Telling you. He's going to make a lot of really good plays, but there's going to be two or three throughout a couple games where you can dive into the crowd or just falling when no one's around him or something.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I just need him to break a backboard.
Auburn has its two toughest games of the year. If you're listening to this, this is your Mizzou preview show, as long as Jack gets it out before the game starts. So Auburn plays its first ranked opponent in a long time. Well, Bama should have been ranked when Auburn played them, but they weren't. They're now in the top 10. But Auburn goes and plays hosts Mizzou, right?
Hosts
Mizzou.
Yep, I'm going to the game, boys.
Nice work. You won the lottery.
Yep.
So the Missouri Tigers are a really good basketball team this year. They don't have a Michael Porter Jr. So they don't have a guy you're like, oh, yeah, they got one of the 10 best guys in the country. But they play really good ball, and they haven't lost a ton of games. But when they have lost
– they've lost bad.
They've lost – they've looked horrible. Yeah. So
it's really shocking to look at it when you're like, oh, man, they beat Tennessee the other night. And then you're like, oh, but they lost to Tennessee by 20 points. In the season.
So the number 12 team in the country, they coming off a win over number 6 Tennessee. But yeah, they when they've lost, it's been rough going. And they've only lost the one time. So Tennessee's their only loss.
Hey, can I do my thing?
No, 10-2.
No, Ryan.
They're shooting under 30% from three in conference play. But they're the number one team from two. So I think they just don't really have any desire to shoot threes.
They don't need to.
Ryan.
Yep. They shoot a lot of twos, and they get to the free throw line. According to KenPom and a couple other advanced rating metrics, they're a little overrated.
They lost to Mississippi State. That's who I'm looking at. They lost to Mississippi State.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That one was by, 15?
15, so? Yeah.
Yeah. That's
it wasn't close for a while. Like, Mississippi State started pulling away midway through the second half and then just ran them out the gym.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I feel like Auburn should win this one.
Yeah.
At home, the crowd won't be that much of a factor, I don't think.
Well, if they're not, it's their fault.
Sure. I was really, going back to the South Carolina game, I was really shocked by how loud that place was. But then I hear that it's like the 13th largest venue in college basketball or something. So I guess they can still pack more people in there with the restrictions.
So this would be Auburn's fourth straight win over Missouri.
Ooh.
So.
Man. Now I'm between team, what Ryan said and what you're saying there, I'm feeling
a team that was brought into this conference to be a basketball school.
Yeah.
That was the whole point of Mizzou. Mizzou was not brought into the SEC because of their football. It was because, hey, they've had some decent basketball in the last few years and have a rival with Kansas that gets some eyeballs on the TV screen. But yeah, yep. I don't necessarily think that I see Auburn winning the next two games. I think we've got a much better chance of winning this one than the Baylor game. But I think both are going to be really tough.
We're actually a 2-point favorite right now against Missouri.
I think part of that's because we're hosting Missouri. We're playing at Baylor. But yeah.
Well, I think we're going to end up being something like a, 15-point dog to Baylor.
Cool. Wouldn't shock me.
Yeah.
They're playing really good basketball right now.
They got a couple of pros in their team too. Like, it's not like Auburn about to go play a team like Kentucky that probably going to have three guys go to the NBA off that team. The difference is Baylor's are put together in a way that actually win basketball games.
Yeah. Well, and they've got a guy that used to be at Auburn.
This is the Davion Mitchell show, but also the Dwayne Reed redemption game.
Hmm.
Do you remember that, Chief? Dwayne Reed missing two free throws down the stretch to lose to Baylor in the NIT in 2000 and...
I do.
Is that 2009? March of 09 NIT?
Probably.
That was the only...
That would have been, yeah.
That was the only postseason trip of the Jeff Lebo era. That was my team. That was Quantes, Dwayne Reed, Rasheem Barrett, Kvotny Barber. Mm-hmm. That was a team. And should have gone to the tournament, got put in the NIT because Stanford had a better whatever RPI. I don't know. I really don't know. Stanford and Auburn were both kind of on the bubble.
It's Stanford got Stanford it, Auburn has a better name, I believe, is really what the situation was there.
And then I think Stanford lost in the second round of the tournament. And Auburn lost the NIT. I think that was the NIT championship? No.
No,
it was the NIT Final Four or something. It was like, but it was to Baylor, and it was in Waco, I think, and that was it. It was the game before going to Madison Square Garden, if I remember correctly. So
is that the last and only time we've ever played Baylor, I wonder?
It's got to be the last time.
Yeah.
I'll look it up.
I need us to win this game due to family.
That is our only matchup, March 24th, 2009.
I need us to win this game from family connections, personal connections, but I don't think we're going to. Like, I got a lot of people who have already texted me, like, you watching the game Saturday? I'm like, yeah, I'm going to watch the game. Y'all are going to win, but watch out for Sharif Cooper because he's going to put on a show.
I don't think it's completely out of the question for us to win, but I just – there's no way anybody should go into it thinking, oh, we'll win.
I mean,
Baylor is about as good as Gonzaga right now. I mean, Baylor's not just a really good team. They're one of probably the four best teams in the country. I mean, if they don't get a one seed, there's a massive disappointment for them.
And we've got a completely different team than we had when we went to play Baylor or Gonzaga. So, And Alabama's really good, guys. I hate it so much, but we went toe to toe with that Alabama team as well. This seems a lot different than that team. I'll say that they do have a similar sort of makeup, and that they have a lot of they got a lot of guys that have been around. I mean, they're led by Davion Mitchell, who's been around forever now. And I don't want to completely be a Debbie Downer and be like, oh, we're just going to go over to Waco and lose this game. There's no way we can win. They're just really good. And we would have to play really our best game of the season to win.
Yeah. I mean, not only is Baylor, I mean, they're rated as the best defense in the country right now. And they do everything well, but their kind of their calling card is that they are a turnover machine on defense. They're causing turnovers at about 27% of possessions, which is going to be a massive concern for us if Sharif starts having a couple turnover issues. You know, that could snowball quickly. But they're also a really good offense. I mean,
look,
according to KenPom, they've got the number three offense in the country, and they're hitting threes at a 43% rate right now. That's insane.
Which one of the question is, which one of these two teams? They got a white kid who just launches them, by the way. He's awesome. Which one of these two teams can actually defend the other team? And I think I have more faith that Baylor's defense is going to cause us problems, because Arkansas kind of showed the blueprint. Just trap Sharif. Just send Sharif a trap at half court, and it's everybody loses their minds. It's everybody acts as if they've never seen a basketball before after that.
A second part of that, though. It's if you trap Sharif, it has to be that somebody else or the rest of the team isn't making shots. That's what happened in the second half against Arkansas.
Yeah.
They tried to double Sharif, and then nobody else could hit a shot. Other teams that have done that, you know, even South Carolina tried that to an extent, and it obviously didn't go well.
It was one of the more bizarre things I've ever watched. Al Flanagan, like, he didn't know how to dribble. It was rough. Because nobody was even coming back for the ball. At some points, it was like Sharif was getting doubled, and nobody was even coming to take the ball. It was like no one else wanted it. So hopefully, I mean, Davion Mitchell is a baller on defense.
Yeah, and I was going to say,
he's always been a baller.
I was also going to say Davion Mitchell might score 30 points on us because Sharif is not exactly the best defender, and we've allowed
42% behind the arc right now.
Oh, yeah. God. And the other thing is he can score points in the paint too. So Davion's going to be a real handful for us, and I'm not exactly sure how we're going to stop that.
It'd be an awesome game to have Justin Powell back for.
Oh yeah. It was super sweet. I was really hoping, when he didn't play a couple weeks ago, I thought, well, maybe he'll be back by the time, I go watch him play against Missouri. And when he didn't play against Arkansas and hadn't been practicing or anything, my hopes were pretty much shattered on that front.
According to Bruce today, I mean, he hasn't been doing anything. Not even drills. He's fully away from basketball right now. He sounded like he might be able to get back into some drills this week, but even then, he said it would take 2 weeks before he's in game shape again.
If
you're looking at the calendar, 2.5 weeks from now is the Kentucky game.
Right.
Yeah. Could be nice, but Auburn could be as hesitant as humanly possible with him right now. There's no reason to rush him back. Head injuries are weird, and you don't want to have a freak accident occur where he has another concussion when he isn't fully healed. For his sake, he does not need to be playing basketball right now.
No. But for my sake, he does.
I'm looking at Baylor's roster, and they might be trying to stash an NBA player on there. I see a guy, he's on the end of their bench. His name is Flo Thamba.
Hey, man. You mean Mo Bamba?
Texas is just loan somebody over there?
Yeah, Mo Bamba has just come back.
6'10".
I am going to watch these games. Hopefully we win one of them. I think
indeed.
Neither one of them, again, this year doesn't really matter. That's kind of the the calling card of this year is none of these games actually mean anything. And even if we didn't have a postseason ban, I hate to say that these games may not mean anything, because not we have the record to really be lobbying for tourney bids at this point. But I think this year this team is gelling in a way that I think makes them dangerous for next year. They win over Baylor or a Missouri would be a huge thing for the program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that.
The problem is a win over – here's the thing. A win over Missouri – Missouri already has two losses in the SEC. A third loss in the SEC makes Missouri, I believe, mathematically impossible to win the conference in the regular season. Which
I don't think a third loss does, but it makes it pretty
close. They haven't played Alabama yet. They got to beat Alabama if they do.
Lose, I mean, there's still, what, 12 games in the conference play left? So
what I mean is if we lose to Missouri, it makes it pretty close to impossible for us to beat Alabama in the last game of the season to keep them from winning the conference.
Yeah, I mean, you need Tennessee or LSU to kind of go on a run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Alabama to drop a couple games.
We've run out of time. More or less is how I feel about the whole thing.
Because they're getting pretty close to being mathematically solid.
Yeah, yeah. They would have to bomb at this point, and I don't see it happening for them. So, unfortunately.
Milton, let's blow them out in the last game of the season to make sure their seeding goes down. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't think that's going to be how that works, but we can dream.
I would like them to be undefeated then, and we beat them to ruin a perfect season in the regular season. That would be pretty sweet.
Yeah, now we're.
I don't really want them to be 17-1 in conference play.
Oh my god. They might be though, because the rest of the conference sort of stinks. That's the only solace I can take is that when Missouri is maybe your second best team in the conference, maybe. I don't know. Maybe the conference is a little easier than usual.
Mm-hmm. Not a good sign for the conference.
No. Not at all. But, oh well.
Yeah. I don't really care about the conference. I care about Auburn basketball.
So when's the last time Cal won the conference in any way?
He won the conference
last
tournament.
Season.
Yeah.
Last season, he won the regular season.
He won the regular season last season?
Yeah, they were 13-5.
Okay.
And I want to say they won the conference tournament the year before we did.
Yeah.
That's when I was thinking was the last time they won anything. All right. Yeah. I guess they won it last year.
Yeah, they're back-to-back. They're raining.
I'm a little hesitant on everybody saying he's on the hot seats because, like, yeah, I mean, you get one bad year.
Bad.
It happens again.
Yeah, but...
His bad,
really
year,
satisfied
his bad
with
year's going to send
conference,
probably
though.
His bad year's going to send like three guys to the pros that he can turn around and recruit off of. Hey guys, you see how we still sent three guys to the NBA. You come to Kentucky, even in a bad year, you're going to the pros, and they'll sign
an 11 seed that still wins.
That doesn't make the fans happy though. I've already seen them.
Yeah.
They're pretty restless about that now.
But in
already.
Basketball, all it takes is the right two guys in your recruiting class.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Like, if all of a sudden two guys are convinced by that argument, and they're Anthony Davis and Eric Bledsoe, well, guess what? You're going to win a championship. Like, it's just...
Yeah.
It's kind of like if Auburn keeps its current roster, I could coach that team to the tournament bid. If Auburn keeps its current roster and then adds Jabari next year, yeah, let me coach. And we're making the tournament.
Yeah, that's true. Does
that mean we get to do a podcast with Bruce instead of you?
Yeah, and it'd be way better than this nonsense.
We'll make that trade.
Yeah, exactly. I will too. I'll do it for a quarter of his salary.
I'll do it for, I don't know, like a 16th of a set. Yeah, 16th, because that's
well, the other coaches. Still way more. The other coaches would be mad at you if you did that, because you're driving the market
true.
Down.
It's true.
I'm still going to take the full salary, but make sure the bagman is working overtime.
Well, I think if that happened, that would mean the bagman had been working
Could you imagine if the NCAA uncovered that the head coach was using his own money to buy recruits? It'd be the greatest scandal of all time. The head coach
isn't
like,
that technically isn't that technically what they busted Bruce for in at Tennessee anyway? The cookout.
Yeah, he wasn't handing people cash from out of his own pocket.
That's true.
No, see, at Tennessee they just put the cash in the McDonald's bag.
So. Yeah,
that's right.
I do want to talk about how at some point if Alabama wins the conference, how weird it is that their football team and their basketball team never had a COVID positive.
Yeah, strange.
How they're the only team somehow that was able to make it through the pandemic without anybody testing.
No, positive. I mean, Tuscaloosa, Alabama is just a paragon of what modern science can do.
Here's the other thing I learned today. Tuscaloosa county numbers don't into account Alabama numbers, the University of Alabama numbers. Those numbers, kids who test positive who are part of the university, don't count for the Tuscaloosa County numbers at all.
Yeah, that's right.
Unless they're from Tuscaloosa County. They have a system where they count it to the kid's home county. So if you could test positive in Alabama, and if you're from Atlanta, DeKalb County or whatever, gets another number.
No, try again. DeKalb.
Whatever.
There's no L.
Cobb County, that's what I'll call it.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought he said Cobb County. Did you say DeKalb?
I thought you were saying DeKalb.
Anyway,
I thought you said Cobb County.
It's a system that the Tide is using to protect itself, and I'm coming after it.
Hey, Ryan, you know that people in Illinois call it DeKalb, right?
Yeah, and they're wrong.
Yeah, oh, I agree. I'm from DeKalb County myself. But
people in Colorado call it Florida. There's a Florida. There's a Florida Road in Durango, Colorado.
Oh, I've seen Florida before.
Florida would be how you would pronounce that in Spanish.
Yeah. The river is Guadalupe, but the street in Austin is Guadalupe.
Well, hey, what's that town about 30 minutes north of Auburn, Crow?
Oh, Lafette? That's pronounced the man's name.
Marquis de Lafette, man.
Marquis de Lafette. All right. Well, that's all we got to talk about today. 52 minutes on two games. Hopefully, we'll have a new defensive line coach and maybe a
we didn't even talk about
outside
that.
Linebacker coach for you guys next week, and maybe two wins to talk about or two losses to mourn about.
We might even bring Nerd on and talk a little recruiting.
That's true. Apparently, there's some football stuff happening in terms of recruiting next week, so we should probably bring Nerd on.
Maybe you I'll need to take that the, take a week off, girl.
Yeah, I'll take some paternity leave finally. All right, well, you guys listening to this on a Tuesday, have a War Eagle weekend.
Well,